This week's mailbag comes to us from Brigitte. Hi, Lisa. I just wanted to say thank you for the amazing information that you have been sharing with me since I have signed up for your newsletter. I am an entrepreneur, a home organization, and design enthusiast. So far, your newsletter and blog posts have helped me gain lots of knowledge on organizing different parts of a home. I have really been inspired by your mini courses, the Sunday Basket. The printables are really user-friendly and useful. Keep up the good work.
Do you have an Organized 365 success story? If so, we would love to hear about it. Please send us an email at customerservice@organized365 and tell us how you have taken back your home, your paper, and your life with Organized 365.
Welcome to the Organized 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. Welcome back to the third part of my History of Home Economics series. The first episode, I talked to you about my personal history, which is always helpful, knowing your point of view when you start something. And last time we talked about the history of home economics from basically no home economics discussion outside of personal homes starting in the 1800s through, I left you at World War II. We were going into World War II, home economics would still play a big role inside of the actual war. But when the war ended, home economics shifted a lot. So that would have been like 1944. Now, based on the history of the book Pendulum that I've read before, that everything changes every 80 years. Like the pendulum swings forward and back every 80 years. And I'm going to be doing some interviews this summer about how we're learning in Organized 365 to make the invisible work visible so we can have discussions, so we can have more equity at home. And really, it's just bringing back and raising the awareness that, hello, there is an economy inside of the American home. There is work to be done inside of the home. The home is not like going home and you just get to do whatever you want. Like we are a true economy. And how the home economy goes, so goes the whole country. It is very, very important. However, everything that I'm going to share today, this, until I read this book last summer, is my understanding of home economics. What I shared with you last time is my understanding of home economics for the last 11 months. What I'm going to share with you today is what I understood to be home economics. And if you are of my generation or younger, it may also be your view of home economics. And I see now why so many of us are like, hey, we're doing a good job over here. This is actually like a real thing. We're not playing. This isn't a hobby we've got going on over here. Like, we are making the world work by making the homes work. So I'm going to start by reading to you a couple of excerpts, starting with page 131. I'm in The Secret History of Home Economics. I'm just going to read a whole bunch of these, and then I will unpack it. After World War II, like those bureau patterns, women's lives in the U.S. changed quickly from coveralls and lab coats to house coats. Wartime jobs ended, and women had to leave the workforce and make room for veterans. The consequences were rapid and obvious. By 1860, more than one-third of women married before the age of 20, and two-thirds married by the time they were 24. Birth rates bounced up after more than a decade of deprivation and war. The share of female college students fell to one-third, down from half the total number of students in 1920. Almost every man aged 25 to 34 worked in the 1950s, but only one-third of the women. Despite technological advances that made laundry and the like faster and easier, women spent as much time on housework in the 1950s as they had 30 years before, about 52 hours per week. Housewifery could be seen as a sign of progress because it meant that men were finally earning enough to support a family. In 1947, editorial titled "Goodbye, Mammy, Hello, Mom," housewifery could be seen as a sign of progress because it meant that men were finally earning enough to support a family. Let me fast forward a little bit. I'm at page 136. New textbooks promoted the idea that tending to her family was a woman's primary job, no matter whether she also worked for pay and no matter what home economics thought they were teaching. In 1943, Abraham Maslow proposed the now famous hierarchy of needs, which posited that humans needed first the physical essentials of survival, then love, esteem, and self-actualization. 3 years later, Congress passed the National Mental Health Act, which created the National Institute of Mental Health and made psychology a major public health issue for the first time. In that same month, Dr. Benjamin Spock published his paradigm-changing parenting guide, The Common Sense Book of Baby and Childcare. He spoke at the 5th White House Conference on Children and Youth in 1950, the first of those conferences to focus on children's emotional needs, not food and shelter. Simultaneously, theorist Charles Prosser, the force behind two vocational education laws of the 1910s, called for high schools to teach students what they would need to succeed as adults beyond college and career. At any rate, the American Home Economics Association concluded after the war that managing personal relationships, not separating light from dark laundry, was the set of skills that homemakers really needed. Perhaps they thought they had fulfilled Ellen Richards' dream of science freeing women from drudgery, and that was the next step. By the end of the 1950s, the American Home Economics Association had adopted a new definition of home economics, the field of knowledge and service primarily concerned with strengthening family life. The goal of family life education was lofty: to improve happiness and citizenship by honing self-awareness and helping families function better. The lessons were infantilizing, dumb, condescending, and only one step away from a teen magazine. So, I love being a mom. I love being a stay-at-home mom. I love babies. So I am like all in on this definition of home economics. So this is not a problem to me. I wanted to babysit. I wanted to be a mom. I wanted to be a teacher. I just want to take care of children. Like, home is where I want to live. But now that I see the difference between where home economics started and how home economics changed in the 50s, I see where there's this huge divide between women who understood home economics was one thing, and then children like me that were raised in an era where by the time I was a child in the 70s, all the consumer brands, all the media brands, they're all following this new idea of what home economics is. Before that, there wasn't a lot of TV. There was radio, but there wasn't a lot of TV. And what is interesting as you go through the rest of this book is how this new idea of home economics came to be, got rooted in our society, and ultimately fizzled out to where we don't have any home economics at all anymore, either the original home economics or what we had from the 1950s through the 1990s. So that original push for home economics started by women saying, look, what we are doing at home is important, and we should be educated for this role that we play in society, and we should be allowed, and home economics should be something that is studied in colleges and universities and is a contributing force inside of homes and industries and wars and everything. Like, we need to know these things about the science of running a house. And after the war, it became more of a lifestyle and a privilege and a socialization of families and children based on what consumer brands and government and education wanted for society. And I say it that way because sometimes we're so busy living our lives that you can't think about everything. You have to assume that some things we should just take at face value, right? But no, there's always an agenda for everything. Whether you understand the agenda that you're a part of or not, there's always an original agenda that was set into place as to how things change. And kind of embarrassed because I'm part of what was created. Like it just was. Like, this is just how it was for my childhood. So even starting a little bit before this, there was, how does home economics go from a college degree that changes how we look at foods and bacteria and the science of home to how we run our households and child rearing? How did that change? And I think it was a couple of these things. These are all told in the book as well. So Lillian Gilbreth was the wife in the story Cheaper by the Dozen. And she worked with corporations to create products for homemakers like ovens and stoves and layouts and things like that. And her husband actually ran the house. She did not run the house. She did not think that was the best use of her time. Her husband actually ran the house and the kids did all of the work. And she was one of the first characters, or they used to call them live trademarks, that then would market some of these things that were being created for homemakers under home economics. So her husband, Frank, I think was his name, was all about time and efficiency, which is where that movie Cheaper by the Dozen, the original one and the original book came from, which I have not read. I've just seen the more modern one, which I can quote by verse. But basically, figuring out the efficiency, I believe he was in the war, figuring out the efficiency of how to run a home to save time, to get as much done and all of those things. He ran the household. She was off working. She was a working woman. But this was part of the beginning of this idea of having characters, or we would call them today influencers, bloggers, characters that would start to create pictures of what a home life could or should look like. And they also called them live trademarks. So each brand would get their own live trademark. Like we had Aunt Jemima was a live trademark. Betty Crocker was a live trademark. And they were created by the companies that sold products. They would create this character that then would sell their products for them. Then there's Leanna Driftemeyer, and she had the longest running radio show called Kitchen Clatter. So again, she was a working woman and she had this radio show, Kitchen Clatter, that went on and on and on and on and on. And she really kind of started to bring to life this idea of having a homemaker as your full-time role. And this is what it would look like. Now, let me be very clear. I was a full-time homemaker. I loved it. Like, it was my career. I loved it. But I didn't realize how much I was marketed to and how much of the angst that myself and my fellow generation women went through to try to make this decision of if we were going to be a primary homemaker or a primary working woman, and the division that was in that decision between which side you took. It was created all the way back in the 50s in this idea that you were a homemaker and that this was the primary role, because now we had enough profit in the economy and we had enough wealth in male jobs so that women had the luxury of having this job. And as good things do, it just evolved from there. Some of the good things that did come out of this part of the home economics story are that we had the Head Start program and we really started to get some great education that came through. Home economics then became family and consumer sciences, which is the degree that I earned. I didn't really realize family and consumer sciences was a home ec degree. During this season, home economics was still doing things like they created the food for NASA to be able to send people into space and freeze-dried food. And they were still making these scientific advancements in nutrition and how we did housework, but very much the consumer brands, you know, Betty Crocker and Kimberly Clark and P&G and Johnson & Johnson, they all started creating these stories of what it meant to run your family and to do things inside of the home. And they started creating commercials and TV shows. And this is not in the book, but I do know this is true. Soap operas were then created for these housewives that were at home to entertain them during the day. And then all the advertisements during the soap operas were sponsored by the soap companies because those were the things that you needed to buy to be inside of your homes. So where does that leave us today? Understanding the origin of any conversation, if you're looking at any political conversation, societal conversation, generational conversation. That's why I love to look at generations. And in reading the book of The Secret History of Home Economics, I now see why I would say things to my grandmother and she'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about. Just go do the job. Like, she was a woman who went to college and supported her husband in his job
And when he died and she had these kids still, she just kept doing the books and she kept working. Like, she's like, what do you mean? Are you going to do housework or working? Yes, it's all work. Yes, you do all of it. Because her understanding and her childhood growing up was that women worked at home, at work, for money, not for money. You just worked. Like, you just did things. Like, why do we have to discuss the semantics? It just is. But if you don't have that kind of a rich conversation going on inside of your household, or you don't take the time to think at it at such an intricately analytical level as I do, because why would you? Then you just end up with these conversations inside of your house saying, well, why am I doing all the unpaid work? Why is housework considered women's work? Why is home organization in academia considered a hobby optionally undertaken by women? Like, why is it not considered an essential ingredient of a way of us to get more time in the future by investing time today? And the reason why is because that's just the point of view that we're hearing today. Obviously, all the way back in the 1900s, there were lots of studies being done on women's time and lots of studies being done shown that we can reduce the amount of labor that is done at home and that women are contributing valuable role to society and they should be compensated. It was women in home economics that said we should reduce the amount of hours that we're working in a factory. Like, there was much more being done in tandem than there is today. Whenever I notice that there is a big divide between two people, I love to go back all the way in history to see if there is a time when there was not this divide and then try to figure out how did the divide get created. So going forward in this series, I want to talk a little bit more about the division of housework and how did it go from being all women's work to having supports for women at home so that they could go out and work to now being back to this discussion of having equity at home. And I think the biggest thing that we need to talk about is the invisible labor of what is being done at home. So much of what we do inside of our households is done because we have always done it, because that's what we watch our mothers do, that's what we watch our grandmothers do, and that's just what we do. You live your life on autopilot. We all do. If you had to make decisions about everything every day, you would be out of your decision-making capacity by 9 a.m. Our lives are so habitual. We don't even notice how much of our life is just running completely on autopilot. Just do the next thing, do the next thing, do the next thing. So when we today, as women and men, are looking at our modern lives with the internet at our disposal, in the knowledge economy, in being able to have all of our things that we need pretty much delivered straight to our house, you don't even have to go to a store if you don't want to. Like, the way we spend time today versus 3 years ago is, it's so different. You would have never imagined in 2019 this is how you'd be living today, that stores would not be open 24 hours anymore, and almost everything you get would just be delivered to your house. Like, there are implications of this going forward also. Like, just like in the last podcast, I said that Greg and I are going to consciously go back to how we used to cook 20 years ago so we can show the kids this is how you can make simple meals from home that don't come in a box. You actually get these six ingredients and it makes these four different meals and it only costs this amount of money. I think quickly we're going to realize that it is great and very convenient that we're getting everything delivered to the house, but the amount of cardboard that I am recycling that Greg tells me is not actually being recycled is really starting to make me think, is what we're doing really sustainable? And I don't think it really is sustainable. But right now, I have so many things on my to-do list, it's in the back of my head. This is something I need to work on, but it's not something I have the bandwidth to work on today. And that's true for everything, right? Like, you can know that there is change coming or we're in the process of a change, but not know exactly what it's going to look like when we're done, but you're just in a process of becoming aware that there needs to be a change to be made, and that's okay. It's okay. You don't have to have the perfect answer. You don't have to know where we're going to end when this discussion is over. I'm just opening it up to the possibility that maybe this conversation that we're having about the invisible work being done has happened before, as it has, and that we will get to an agreement and we are moving forward. And it's not going to happen overnight, But in each individual family, we are going to get to a more equitable and a more where everybody feels valued for the work that they are contributing into the family, and the supports that are needed will be there. So next episode, I want to talk to you about how I did that. Like when I went on this book tour last year for 6 weeks, where I found out about this book, read this book before I even got back home again, I didn't do anything at home. And Greg said to me, okay, so we got to sit down. We've got to figure out what's going to happen. You're going to be gone for 6 weeks. Like we need to know what's going on around here. I said, there's no list. Greg's like, what do you mean there's no list? I was like, I don't do anything around here. He's like, no, you do a lot around here. I was like, no, I pretty much have worked my way out of a job. He's like, no, you do a lot of things. I'm like, pretty much if you bring me the mail when we're at the beach for a week, everything else is going to be done without me here. I said, Greg, you have no idea. I've totally worked my way out of a job. He's like, that's impossible. You haven't. And then I left for 6 weeks. And at the end, he still wanted me to be back more, but he said, you're right. You don't do anything around here. I don't do anything around here. How did I do that? How did I work myself out of being a full-time stay-at-home mom to being able to travel for 6 weeks and literally nothing changed? I'll tell you in the next episode.
The series that we're in right now, where I explore the secret history of home economics, both the book and my own personal family history of women getting a college degree in home economics. And actually, that's what my college degree in as well. I am amazed and frankly astounded at how different home economics was viewed in the 1800s and the early 1900s, how that changed in the 1940s, and how now, again today, in the 2020s, we're starting to go back to that original view of how important it is to have a good foundation at home, that there is an economy that is happening at home, that there is work to be done at home, and that work is valuable and it is important. And I'm so excited that over the last 10 years, Organize 365 has really worked hard at figuring out what is the work that needs to be done? What is housework? What is the definition of organization? How can we eliminate Swiss cheese organization and actually get organized once and for all so we can live an organized life and we could be more productive? Organization is a learnable skill. 87% of those surveyed in Organize 365 surveys agree. Organization is a learnable skill. I have a degree in home economics and education, and I love teaching. I can teach you the skill of home organization, reducing the amount of housework that you do and making the invisible work that is done at home visible. I'd love for you to join us in learning how to learn the skill of getting organized at home. It starts with the Sunday basket. After you've got your Sunday basket going, go all in with the productive home solution and then take that success into your work with the Friday Workbox. You can find out all of the Organize 365 products that help you learn how to get organized over at organize365.com under the program tab.